This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into the Lombardi Line on a Tuesday. This show, as always, presented by DraftKings alongside the one and only Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Got a great 2 hours on tap. Plenty of college hoops conversation going on with the Field of 68 getting underway with the first four today. We'll have Tom Crean join the program, also get some best bets from Will Hill, and the NFL never sleeps. It is 365, ladies and gentlemen. Another former GM will join us and Randy Mueller to discuss that. And, you know, we got some free agent stuff sliding out every single day, Michael. So the NFL, it really is, though. It's 24/7, 365, and they don't let any other sport have a moment.
No, they really don't. They just turn it right up. And it's always interesting, right? So we move from free agency into now we're in that trading mock draft period. You know how much I love this, right? We're into the mock draft. This team's doing that. I heard this. I heard that. You know, back to lying season. Mm-hmm. Again, we go lies, lies, lies. So, you know, it's good. It's fun. It really is. It's fun to look at the teams, to see the plans, to see what they really think of themselves, and to see the reality, which is oftentimes not what we read about.
I am excited because you bring up the draft. To kick us off in hour two, we're going to read some tea leaves when it comes to the draft and some things that we're seeing out there and what is the truth and reality versus the latter. But real quickly to get us started, I just want to make sure folks have the updated lines and numbers for these two games that are going to come up today in the NCAA. First four from Dayton, Ohio, Wagner and Howard. Howard's a 3.5-point favorite to kick us off. Total 128. And Michael, I know that you have a KenPom subscription. You make sure you reload for this time of year. You'll be pleased to know these are the two lowest rated teams in KenPom in the tournament.
Well, I got a big challenge ahead of me. I mean, I won this damn thing in our family chat last year, got no damn credit for it whatsoever. Wow. Just completely dismissed all of them. Berman, his family. My two sons don't even acknowledge it that I won. And so now I got to come back. I got to repeat. I feel like the Chiefs. I have to come back and repeat the family championship.
Then maybe you'll get respect.
Yes, I will be burning the Ken. No, they won't either. I'm burning the KenPom Midnight Oil. Of course and after this is over with, I'll wait another year to renew the subscription again.
I'm proud of you. That is a game that I will have on. It'll be on one of my television screens, but probably not listening to. I've got other stuff that I may be more interested in tonight. CSU and Virginia also going toe-to-toe, which we love that pack line defense, don't we, with Virginia, who is a 4-1 shot even to make the tournament 10 minutes before Selection Sunday. So they probably shouldn't be here, but Michael, I got to tell you, I love the Mountain West Conference so much. And I'm looking at my bracket. I'm filling things out. We're going to give out our final four picks later on in the program. I'm going through. And I like a lot of these Mountain West teams to win a couple games. And then I look in our updated guide that your boy Steve Mackinnon has all the tips and trends and all of these things historically. This makes me sick to my stomach. Since 2003, Mountain West team seeded 8th or worse, Michael. 3-32 straight up. 5-28-2 ATS. I wanted to bet Colorado State. I wanted to see them move forward, maybe win a couple games. Nevada, I have them winning a couple games in the tournament. That's the record I have to go by for these seeds. Are you kidding me?
I know, but that's one of the things I do on KenPom is I go to his, he has those conference rankings, right? Now, everybody says the Big Ten was the best conference. And we saw Michigan State get in there with 19 wins because the Big Ten's really good. And according to him, he's got the Big Ten as the third best conference in the league. He's got the Big 12 still. The Mountain West, he has, 7th overall, Stormy. I hate to break the news to you.
Yeah, it's not pretty.
Like, to me, that makes me a little bit concerned about putting too many teams in the Mountain West in my picks, it's a little bit, I got to balance that.
I'm very concerned. I'm emotional. And prior to SDSU and the run that they went on last year too, they were on a run of losing like 10 of 11 games as a league. So not ideal. But that is the action that we have tonight. CSU laying 2.5 total in that one, really low, 121.5, although shockingly it has gone up. And we'll get back to college basketball a little bit later on, but let's get to the NFL, Michael, because there's some things to discuss coming out of Steelers country. First, they signed Russell Wilson. And then before they traded for Justin Fields, they traded away Kenny Pickett to the Philadelphia Eagles. He had his introductory press conference yesterday, and when talking to reporters, he had this to say about how he handled the situation. Take a listen.
I think the communication You know, is what it is. It was behind closed doors. You know, I'm confident in the way that I handled it. I handled it the way I should have handled it. You know, I'm excited to be here. It worked out so well that Philly was the place I ended up landing in. So I think everything happens for a reason. And, you know, I'm right where I'm supposed to be.
And so that's, of course, my
supposed to be.
Yeah.
Stormy. I mean, here's a guy's a first round pick and he's settling to be a backup and he's happy and he think he did the right thing. I mean, like, this to me drove me crazy. This is one of the worst press conferences I've ever heard. Like you're happy to be a backup now? This is what you aspire to be? You're never going to play. Jalen Hurts is a rock. He's playing, right? Like, what are you doing? Like, this is where you wanted to go to? Don't you have an ounce of competitive spirit within your body to say, I want to start. I'm a first-round pick. I played 4 years at Pitt. I got to go play. I mean, this is disappointing. Like, this is so disappointing that it deserves a daily coach column for it. Because I'm like, where is the excitement and the competitiveness? Like, where is it? Like if I were the GM of the Eagles, if I was Howie Roseman and I saw that, I would be like, I'm worried about this guy a little bit. Yeah. I mean, because when it's going to get tough, is he going to say the communication was good and I did the right thing? Did the right thing? You didn't even come try to compete.
Well, and like, that's what I keep on going back to is like the situation. Granted, it wasn't great to begin with, where he finds out about the Russell signing on social media. He goes to talk to Tomlin about it. And Tomlin says that, hey, Russ is in pole position to be the starter. And then immediately he's like, OK, well, I'm out of here. Like, I just don't like that mentality. And it goes back to the all of the things that came out about him last year in season when he was coming back from the injury. And granted, even in this press conference yesterday, he said that all of those reports about him not wanting to be second string weren't true and yada, yada, yada. But like, that's what we keep hearing. Right. And so I feel like where there's smoke, there's fire. And if we keep hearing that he doesn't want to do X, Y, Z, and he's going to do whatever he can to get out of a situation. Like, that's not what you want in a leader, and that's not what you want in a quarterback. So maybe a backup is the right role for him.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't want a non-competitor on my team. I want the backup quarterback to be like, get me in that game. Get me in there. I'll show you what I can do. You know, Gardner Minshew, just give me a chance to play. Let me go in there and show you what I can do. Meanwhile, this guy's, well, this is where I'm meant to be. Because you were an Eagle fan growing up? I mean, like, seriously, like, this is your career. This is your career. You got traded for breadcrumbs. Like, that's how much nobody thought of you. Like, you got to revamp your career. You don't want to compete again. Russell Wilson isn't coming in with an MVP trophy underneath his belt. Like, why wouldn't you want to compete? I did not like it. I get it. I know I'm old and, you know, stay off my lawn, all that crap. But the reality of it is like, at some point, competitiveness never goes out of style. It's not going to go out of style. And you need that from the quarterback position if you're going to lead a team. Nobody's going to follow a mopey, well, here I am guy. Who's going to follow that?
No, but Michael, like,
I was so disappointed.
Me too. And I just don't understand necessarily the desire to go somewhere else where you're, for sure, barring a significant injury, not going to have an opportunity to play, as you alluded to earlier. Like, at least with Russell Wilson, you imagine the leash isn't going to be particularly long, right? It's not like you're owing him the $39 million. Like, they're not paying him. They're not beholden to him.
Yeah, just go in and compete, right? I got two more years to pick up my fifth-year option. What he just did is basically say, well, I'm never my fifth-year options, forget about that. Like, I'm giving that money away. Like, you just basically told the National Football League you want to be a backup for the rest of your life. Here's your clipboard, you know? I mean, I mean, it's just to me, and I get it. You know, not happy, transfer. Go somewhere else. Get in the portal. You know, not going to – we'll have Tom Crean on in the next block. Don't want to play in the NIT? Don't play. Like, I get that's where we live in. But, look, if you're going to be a professional athlete, you got to compete. That's number one. I don't care what anything else happens. You got to learn how to embrace competition. And you've got to and really relish in it. Or else you're going to have a really good couple years, but you'll be standing there watching the games next to me.
Michael, another one here. What's going on with L'Jarius Sneed? Because we see the reports coming out of Indianapolis media that they're ironing out the details with the Chiefs for a trade. And then ESPN Stephen Holder and Adam Schefter both are shutting it down, saying as of right now, it's not happening. There's no conversations. What's going on from your perspective?
Well, I think there's always a timing issue. That, you know, we know what's happened to us in terms of, for me, with these news aggregate people that they just kind of put things together. Were the Chiefs interested in Sneed? Yeah, I think they were. They were interested in Danielle Hunter to start off free agency. But I think once they started to do investigative work and they kind of got involved, I think they were concerned about some issues that they thought, along with the price tag and the cost of the draft compensation. So what I think we have a hard time understanding is people kicking the tires and genuine interest. Mm-hmm. Did the Colts offer a second round pick for Snead? No. No. Did they engage in trade talks? No. Were they interested? Yes. And they did their homework, and now they walked away, and they gave their money that they were going to denote that they were going to try to sign Danielle Hunter and try to sign other rushers. They gave it to their own players. And now they can use the draft. They kind of re-signed their team. And you say, well, they didn't make any improvements. Yeah, they did. They got the team. They got their players back that they wanted, and now they can add to it. It doesn't mean you have to go spend money on some new player when you reinforce your own team, and your own team was close enough to win to beat Houston in a playoff game. Maybe you have a chance to add more talent to it by the draft or some other way. So I think the price tag on Snead's too high in terms of the contract and then the compensation. Remember, for the Chiefs to give it up, they got to get something better than they could get a compensatory three if he was out in the open market. So they would have to, you're going to have to give up at least a four and something else for him. And, you know, it seems worth it, but then you're eating a lot of cap room.
Yeah. So whatever team trades for him has to give up assets. And then he's obviously out here trying to get paid and get that money in the bank, too. So it's assets and compensation. I do have one more follow up question on this, so we can hit that when we come back from the break. And looking at some of the biggest deals of the offseason so far as well, continuing our NFL talk and news. We're just getting started here on the Lombardi Line. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you haven't already, make sure you check out the new and improved VSiN.com. Our website's got a fresh new look, enhanced navigation, and a mobile-first focus. But all that same great educational content now on the website. Everything you need to bet the madness in March, all things college hoops covering the homepage right now. Plus, you know, our guy Michael Lombardi is always locked and loaded with the weekly articles. NFL free agent hit and misses this free agency season. So always appreciate Michael getting down there. VSiN.com. And Michael, I want to follow up on one last thing here with the L'Jarius Sneed conversation we had with the Kansas City Chiefs. We were talking about, the Colts' potential interest and talking about how kicking the tires and an offer are very different things. Is there a chance that the Chiefs might be able to get him to play on the tag this year? Is that a realistic possibility?
Yeah. I mean, who's going to turn down $19 million? I mean, really, you know, everybody turns it down in March. Everybody turns down $22 million. I'm not playing on that tag. Jesse Bates, I'm not playing on that tag. Oh, here I am. I show up the first day when the checks are coming. They're going to play on the tag, of course. That's the basically when you do this, Stormy, you're renting the player for the year. You're saying he's got value to me. I'm going to rent him. I don't want to do a long-term deal because it ties up too much cap room. I can't afford it. But I can do it on a one-year deal. Mm-hmm. So like rents, like when you rent a home, it costs you more than if you were to buy it because you don't have the down payment. So you rent the player for the year. T. Higgins, going to rent him in Cincinnati, 1 year. Okay, he goes, gives me a year to draft a receiver, develop the young receivers we drafted last year. And then, of course, I got to pay Ja'Marr Chase. So this is kind of like roster management on how you're doing it.
The Kansas City Chiefs, an odds-on favorite to win a ninth straight AFC West championship. We'll see how things play out with L'Jarius Sneed, and we'll keep tabs on it for sure. We'll come back to the NFL in a little bit, but it is March Madness time here. Officially, we turn the page, the first four beginning today. We've got the NIT underway today as well. And to help us break it all down, we welcome in Tom Crean, college basketball analyst at ESPN, former head coach at Marquette, Indiana, Georgia, took the Golden Eagles to their last Final Four. Coach, we appreciate you taking some time today.
I'm happy to do it. I appreciate you getting me on a little bit earlier. I've got an NIT game tonight, Minnesota at Butler. So I just got in from Tampa, Mike, and I'm on my way to try to catch the this walkthrough and the other walkthrough and get ready to try to do a game tonight. So everything got a little bit sped up. So I appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate you having it, and we loved what you said about the NIT. I just went off on Kenny Pickett about not wanting to compete for the starting job, and your NIT conversation was ideal because, look, the one thing I do know, what you said is so true, you can't simulate game reps. And every player needs more game reps. Why was Florida Atlantic so good last year? Because they had a lot of old, the guys that have played together for a long time. There's value in continuing to play.
Absolutely. And there's value in continuing to coach. And at the end of the day, you know, that's what you're here for. I mean, I just had a conversation with my brother-in-law, Jim, who they're getting ready to move to California, and they've got the owners' meetings and all that stuff coming up. And like, he said, what are we there for if we're not to make them better? I mean, there's a guy that understands the business of the NIL and college football and how big of a business it is as well as anyone. And I think what I look at it, guys, is like there's only so many opportunities for anybody to do what they love, whether it's coach, whether it's play, especially the players, because they're as much to blame in a lot of this situation as anybody else. But like, we're getting so misguided and distracted by what is urgent, which is the portal, which is the recruiting, which is the money, which is more money at the program you're in or driving the money up so you can get a better deal. And we're losing sight of what is important. And important it is, no matter how many days you get to make your team better, you got to take advantage of it. If you don't have them all, you don't have them all. If you don't have all your coaches, you don't have all your coaches. But like ESPN is still televising all of these games, and you're going to see kids leaving NCAA tournament teams. And it's just the way that it is. And you've got to continue to understand what's most important, because when these days are gone, they are gone. And I think there's so many players, more in basketball than football, that more in basketball that think, man, the ball is never going to stop bouncing, or I'm always going to have a team to coach. I got to get my business right. I got to get the portal right. Yeah, you can do all that. No one said that's not important. No one said that's not important at all. But like, what are you doing it for if you're not coaching and competing and wanting to play in the games? And it's getting kind of ridiculous. And again, everybody's got their reasons, but the most important thing is competing, playing in the games, and giving yourself a chance to get better, no matter what anybody thinks.
Yeah, and Coach, there are a whole lot of people that agree with those sentiments. So thanks again for reiterating and sharing that. And I also love these athletic families, the subtle, oh, just talking to my brother-in-law, Jim Harbaugh, by the way, who he was talking about there.
I was, literally, yeah. I was. I mean, yeah, I'm not name-dropping on Jim and John Harbaugh. Yeah. And I name-drop when I say I talked to Mike Lombardi, but I mean...
Me too, Coach.
Exactly. Family's not name-dropping.
As we do go ahead and look to the NCAA tournament with all the action getting underway, in your estimation, who's playing the best basketball in the country right now? The UConn Huskies are the favorite, but they've got a tough bracket, obviously. Who do you think's playing the best?
You know what's crazy? The people that are playing the best are all in the East region, to me. It's beyond belief. I mean, UConn, without a doubt, is playing extremely well and getting better. They had a tough game at Creighton, but I think it was their fourth game in 10 days. They looked tired, which is natural. They haven't looked that way ever since. I think Iowa State is ridiculously good. They looked tired a couple weeks ago. They had a couple of tough games, but they look fresh right now. They lead the country in forcing turnovers, which I think is something, you know, for your listeners, when they look at that, you have to take care of the ball in the NCAA tournament. There's no doubt about that, okay? But at the end of the day, if you turn people over and if you rebound, that's probably going to carry over. And Iowa State leads the country and points off turnovers. McNeese State is second and Samford is third. So like, those things are important attributes, and just like low turnovers are. And so I think Iowa State's really good. Illinois just won the Big Ten. Auburn just won the SEC. I think BYU has got Final Four potential because of the way they shoot the ball. And they have a five man named Ali Khalifa that can shoot the ball and pass the ball. There's numerous other teams. I think Marquette's getting ready to be good again because they'll have Tyler Kolick fresh. He may not be totally healthy. I doubt he will be totally healthy, but he'll be fresh. And I think that means a lot inside of this tournament. I still like Florida, even though they lost Micah Hanlockton the other day. I think Tennessee rebounds from the way they played this past weekend. Kentucky can certainly score points in a shortened bench situation. I think that even is better for Kentucky, which you can play a shortened bench in two games over 3 days. So those are kind of the teams, but I love the teams in the East region as much as anything. And only one team is coming out of there, which just defies logic. Unless they put Iowa State in the same bracket of UConn, because they wanted to prove a point that they shouldn't have scheduled the way that they scheduled in the non-conference. I have no idea how you get to Iowa State is the eighth best team in the country based on the season and based on the last couple of weeks.
You know, we keep asking ourselves that question when it comes to, you know, North Carolina. KenPom has them as the ninth, and they ended up with a one seed. Auburn, you know, ended up as a four seed. There seems to be such an imbalance. Do they, as they select this coach, do they look at some of those analytical numbers like the KenPom site?
I would think they do. I would think they look at everything, and I really don't know. And I haven't really asked anybody that's been in that room, and I think for the most part, they're going to stick with what they need to say for a soundbite. So I don't really know. But the bottom line is you better start doing the look test and the eye test and look around and like, man, you put Iowa State against North Carolina, I'm coming out of there with Iowa State. You put Auburn against North Carolina, you put Illinois against North Carolina, I'm coming out of there with those teams. And North Carolina's fine. They're good, but they struggle guarding pick and roll. Just look at the way they struggled guarding DJ Burns the other night. They struggled guarding the dribble. They can score points. See, I think what happens is everybody thinks they get caught in this eye test of scoring points, and they don't realize that so many of these games, especially in the last 8 minutes, 6 minutes, 5 minutes, are coming down to the half court. So, like, you better be able to execute your offense and get stops in the half court and keep people off the foul line or get to the foul line, keep people from getting offensive rebounds or getting your own offensive rebounds. And if you've got, like, Iowa State's a great example. They can shoot. They're quick. They've got good two-way players. They're good enough inside to beat you. But they're going to be so relentlessly on top of you that it's going to be hard to do anything consistently offensively for 40 minutes. And I'm not sure what everybody's looking at. I'm really not. I know spending all this time I spend on film and being in the studio and games, there are certain teams that I would want no part of this week, and there are certain teams that if I was had a chance to play them on a Saturday or Sunday after the first round games.
Coach Crean, thank you for lending the time. Get to shoot around and have a great call tonight.
Thanks, Coach. Thanks, appreciate you.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Really, really appreciate his time and insight. BYU to the Final Great Four, stuff. By the way, 15-1, if it's of interest. We'll be right
that's
back.
That's pretty low. Oh, yeah. Nice.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Get ready to dominate the brackets. Turn your picks into profits this tournament with the VSiN Pro March Mania Betting Guide. Inside the guide, you'll find expert strategies, insider tips, and in-depth analysis. It'll give you the edge you need to outshine the competition. From underdog upsets to championship predictions, the VSiN Pro Betting Guide has brackets from hosts and experts, NCAA tournament betting trends, and of course, best bets for every game and round of the tournament. Don't miss out on this game-changing resource. Download the VSiN Pro March Mania Betting Guide today at vsin.com/madness, vsin.com/madness. And this thing is amazing, by the way, 95 pages. Like the quick turnaround amazing that our crew did to put this together, Michael, is awesome.
Yeah, no question. And it's so, you know, and it, what it does is it forces you to not look at the number. What causes you the most trouble in your brackets? For me, particularly, is I look at the number. And I trust that the committee knows what they're doing. So when I see a 2 play of 15 or a 3 play of 14, you know, well, you got to go with the 3 here, right? Well, you know, like just what Coach Crean was saying about some of these teams. And I think it's all about matchups. It's about guard play. It's who can stop, who can execute in a half court. Those are the things that we realize at the end of the tournament that we should have thought of at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And this book helps us do that. It really does.
Yeah, credit Adam Burke and the whole crew for doing this bad boy. All of the trends that Steve Mackinnon has in there are amazing. And by the way, Coach Crean did not make me feel awesome about how far I have North Carolina going. So that's a little tease for later on in the show when you and I give out our final four picks. But let's get back to the NFL here, Michael. Speaking of numbers, Chase Young gets a 1-year deal, $13 million to go to NOLA. The time in San Francisco, short-lived. I do wish we had that third round pick, neither here nor there. What do you make of Chase Young going to the Saints?
Well, you're
going to
get it back on the compensatory now because he just got $13 million. You're going to get it back on the compensatory. Look, this is when a guy signs a one-year deal like this. Now, he got a lot of money for it, but it's still a one-year deal. It'll be a five-year deal that voids, right? It's $13 million. They're calling it a one-year deal. But really, they're going to spread this thing out so they can fit it within the cap of the Saints. Gives them a defense that was really good last year. They gave up 72 points the last five games of the season, Stormy. They were playing good defense. And Young's going to have to turn his career around. I mean, he got a kind of a save. He got a kind of a mulligan here to get the $13 million from the Saints because there's no market out there for him at high numbers. I mean, Bryce Huff got almost $20 million a year. Danielle Hunter got a huge deal, you know. And if you're Chase Young, you're saying, wait a minute, why aren't I in the mid-20s? Well, your play doesn't represent the mid-20s. So he kind of got a mulligan. He got saved on this deal with $13 million, you know. And so now he's got to go prove it. Now he's going to go out there on a good team with a good defense who, like I said, only gave up 72 points the last five games. He's got to show that he can play football with power and can rush and not just run up the field, which is what he was doing with the 49ers. And then he was such a liability in their run defense, Stormy, that it became a problem. I thought they were going to bench him come Super Bowl time. Mm-hmm.
I know. And like, that's what's interesting is like, there were questions. You and I were having the conversation on the show about whether or not he was even going to start, and give him a little bit of credit for his performance, especially that first half in the Super Bowl, which was awesome. But where was that the entire time, you know? And that's my big question about him, because he was somebody that coming out of college was just a freak of nature beast. He was defensive rookie of the year in 2020 when he came out with Washington. But then you suffered the ACL injury in November of 21 and has been just trying to get back to that guy for a while now. Do you think that the Saints are a good fit for where he could do that, though?
Yeah, because I think, look, you know, he's going to play against Atlanta twice. He's going to play against Tampa twice. And he's going to play against the Carolina Panthers. That's six games. And so say he gets a half a sack in each of those games, he's in double-digit sacks, right? Mm-hmm. So if he gets 1.5 sacks in those six games, I mean, now he's off to the races, you know, and he should. I mean, he should. You play two games against the Saints, you know, and you should be able to get some pressure on the quarterback. But more than sacks, right? It's really about the pressure. It's about getting the ball out. It's about him showing he can power the tackle back. Because if you just run up the field, everybody blocks you.
And with Kirk Cousins coming into the division, you know, you're going to need one of those guys to get after the quarterback. Cousins has the largest deal by total contract value and by total guarantees this offseason. He was the belle of the ball. As soon as teams were on the prowl for a quarterback, they all wanted Kirk Cousins, Michael. As we look through a lot of these deals that got done and the money that was dispersed, whether it's Kirk Cousins or otherwise, who do you think was the biggest overpay for what a team got?
Well, you know, the overpays are different levels. I mean, I think Chase Young's an overpay at $13 million, but I think obviously there was something else. Another 49er defensive lineman, Kinlaw, he got $7.25 million from the Jets on a one-year deal, and he hasn't done anything in 4 years. They started the first games as a rookie coming out of South Carolina. But since then, he hasn't done much. He's had five sacks over his career. 3.5 came last year. And so, like, I'm wondering, like, why did they have to pay him all that money? Like, who were they competing against to get him? And does he really make them better to eat up $7.25 million of cap room? That one had me a little bit caught off guard. Like, why do that? You know, and I think to me, you know, I think that these running back deals, there's something missing. I thought if Pollard got paid this deal coming off of 2 years ago, I got no issues with it. But last year, he went down to 5.5 yards per reception. He wasn't the same running back in the passing game, which is what he really makes his mark in. And he changed the field. He was a field position changer. So that one surprised me. The Swift deal, that they paid as much as they did in Chicago when the Eagles were going after Barkley, that surprised me. And this is the third team Swift's going to play on in 3 years, which makes me worried, Stormy.
Yeah, you actually wrote in your article this week that's up at VSiN.com, what am I missing when it comes to DeAndre Swift? Like, how are you analyzing that situation with him?
Well, because here's why I look at it. Okay, the Eagles had him. They got him very modestly, right? And they probably, you know, he gained 1,000 yards, but as the season was wearing on, he seemed less effective, right? And it's the same thing that happened in Detroit. I kept saying Detroit's a better team 2 years ago when Swift plays. And then he wasn't playing, and they cashed him out for Gibbs. So he's had two teams that have cashed him out and gotten running backs to replace him. One very expensive in Barkley, the one modestly with a first-round pick in Gibbs. So that makes me worried. Like 2 years in a row, teams have said, we need a better back than Swift. That worries me.
I will throw that those biggest deals back up on the screen here. As you look at these top five, Michael, in terms of the best additions, best value, best bang for your buck, who got the best for what they paid?
Well, I mean, I think, look, Kirk Cousins, you can't overpay a good quarterback. So I think what that deal was really good. Obviously, the Chiefs did. I didn't get the Robert Hunt deal, Stormy. I mean, here's a guy who played 11 games. He's had weight problems his whole career. The Miami Dolphins are running an offense where they try to massage their offensive line. You know, Tua gets rid of the ball in record time. They're trying to run sideways. They don't want you to kind of get a push the pocket back. And they go and make him a $20 million a year player. That surprised me. I think the Wilkins deal is a good deal. I don't care what you pay Wilkins. He's a good player. He's going to play the run really well. He's going to get you some inside pressure. And I got to tell you, I think the Mayfield deal was, I'm not a Mayfield guy, but I think at that number, you know, it's a reasonable deal. If the Giants would have signed Daniel Jones to a deal similar to this, they would have been a lot better off. I love the Greenard deal. I really did. I thought that was a really good deal for Houston. I mean, for Minnesota, I think that's going to prove out to be a good player.
Defensive end certainly got paid over the past week or so. So did guards. And I know you mentioned Hunt probably not being worth that value, but overall, were you surprised to see that position command the type of money that it did so far to start free agency?
I am. I mean, you know, they Damian Lewis, they signed and paid him almost 13 a year. They got 20 million. Look, when you go through the Panthers, okay, if you go through there from Taylor Moten all the way to the North Carolina State rookie, Iggy, I can't say his last name.
Ekwonu?
I mean, they've got tons of money. Yes, Austin Corbett's at center. They're paying him. They're paying Damian. They're paying the guard from Seattle, Damian Lewis, and they're paying Hunt. I mean, they've got everybody in their offensive line is high priced. And if they can't protect, then they misevaluate it.
I think that the order of operations for the division in terms of the odds are pretty on par. The Falcons, by the way, up to -130 now, an odds on number, followed by the Bucks at 3-1, Saints +380, and the Panthers 15-1. Like, those odds seem about right for where that division is. It's the top three that are kind of bundled up, with the Falcons a clear favorite of those three, and the Panthers are pretty far off from the group still.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Panthers, you know, there's questions about the Panthers' talent. There's questions about what they've done in free agency. There's questions about their skill players, right? There's questions about everything that's going on in the building. And it's not reflective of David Canales. I mean, he did a nice job for Tampa last year, but we still don't know if Bryce Young is going to be good enough. And so I think 15-1 is the right number here, Stormy.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Carolina still has a lot to figure out as they get set to embark on a new season with a new head coach and staff. So we talked about contracts, value or lack thereof. When we come back, it'll be time for Lombardi's list. Which teams overall does Michael think have improved themselves the most so far this offseason? We'll get his top five when we return on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook than right now, as we've got a VSiN exclusive offer for new DraftKings customer. Earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. You can earn up to $2,500 worth of bonus bets in your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now and use our code Lombardi when you sign up. That'll earn you a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager right now. Get in there. Also, head over to Total Wine. With so many bottles to choose from, it's easy to find your favorite, all at the lowest prices for over 30 years. Great selection. Find what you love. Love what you find at Total Wine and More. Please drink responsibly. Must be 21. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome you back into the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the sports betting network. And as the dust is starting to settle, the first week of free agency in the rear view, all the big deals we anticipate being done have been done. So teams with odds movement, teams that have moved the needles internally, it feels like all of those moves have been made, Michael. So naturally, we had to ask you to make a list of what teams you felt made the most significant changes, most significant improvements. These are in no particular order, but let's start at let's start with the Atlanta Falcons, because that feels like the most obvious, and why, in addition to Kirk Cousins, you think they've improved their team.
Well, I think the fact that they got Kirk Cousins just improves their team. When you upgrade a quarterback, it's a huge grade upgrade, right? I mean, it's the one position that has value in the betting market that moves the line. And clearly, Cousins' ability to execute a passing game, lead a two-minute drive, not turn the ball over, do all those things is going to make Atlanta a better team. It's going to put more pressure on other areas, but it makes them a better team. The question you have to ask yourself with Atlanta is, can he duplicate that coming off the Achilles? Is he going to be the same player he was prior to the Achilles? Will it take him 4 months? Will it take him 2 months, 3 months? I don't know the answer to that, right? And so, but I think just on the surface, they have upgraded themselves. Then they add Darrell Moody to their team as an outside receiver to help them. I think they have improved. Now, they got to go heavy on the draft, especially in the defensive line. That's going to add, that's going to propel this good offseason to a legitimate chance to win the South. I think they're going to still need some pieces to fix and put together.
And the odds have shifted as such. The Falcons go from plus 110 in the NFC South to now a minus 130 favorite. And the Super Bowl odds as well, from 35-1 now down to 22-1. My only question about that is like, we talk so much about the one quarterback away or one player away theory. And like, if that's something that should concern us at all about Atlanta, that they think that they are so close and that this guy is going to take them over the top.
It makes me worried. It makes me worried because, you know, what I said earlier, though, it's put pressure on other areas, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it makes you concerned. If you watch the Tampa game, right? Tampa, Baker Mayfield's playing absolutely horrible in this game for 3.5 quarters. And the Falcons have the lead. And on the final drive of the game, Baker makes 2 or 3 plays down in the 2-minute drill, wins the game. Why? Because Atlanta has no pass rushers. They can't rush the passer. And maybe they were in on Chase Young, and that's why that the Saints had to pay the 13. Maybe they were trying to get him, too, on a one-year deal. Because if they don't get the pass rusher, I think it's still, no matter how good Cousins is, it's still going to be hard. Look, you know, the Patriots learned this, and so have the Chiefs. You can't outscore everybody, right? The Patriots went from 2006 to 2013, they ranked never lower in 8th in points scored, led the league in points scored 3 times in that span, and yet they never won a Super Bowl during that span. You can't outscore people in the league. You got to play good defense at some point, and you got to have a defense that can rush the passer, and the Falcons don't have that yet.
Let's stay in the NFC, and a team that certainly needed to upgrade their defense and brought in some pieces, the Detroit Lions. You feel like they are one of the most improved groups. Why? What stood out to you?
Well, I mean, look, they needed corners desperately. So they sign, you know, they trade for Carlton Davis. Great, you know, he plays press. He fits their scheme perfectly. Americ Robertson does a good job. I mean, I don't think he's an elite corner, but he'll help. Maybe they can get Emmanuel Mosley to come back and be healthy this year. That could help them if he is. And then, you know, they lose Jonah Jackson to the Rams, and they replace him with Kevin Zeitler yesterday, who's a very good guard. Now, he's not a long-range plan guy, but it helps their offensive line, particularly in pass protection. So when I collect it, pretty good offseason, right? They got corners that they needed. They've added an offensive lineman who they lost, and now they can set themselves up for the draft and build the momentum that they built last year. So I think they've had a really nice offseason, Stormy.
They were up 24-7 in that NFC championship, had the Super Bowl opportunity in their grasp, let it slip away. Maybe their moves this year could push them over the hump. How about the Los Angeles Chargers with their new head coach, Jim Harbaugh? They sure waited to the last minute to figure out their cap situation, but they got it done.
Well, they tried to maneuver everybody and see if they could get it. Look, I don't think this is about who they've signed. I know everybody's going to focus on who they've lost, right? And certainly they've lost some good players, but they've gotten their cap back in better shape than it was in before, which it was. You know, the worst thing you want to be is $40 million over the cap and picking the top 10. Those two things should never go hand in hand, right? If you're going to be $40 million over the cap, you want to win the damn thing. I put them on the list because I think Harbaugh's going to make them tougher. I think he's going to make them a better team. He's going to make them a multidimensional three-element team, and that is going to make them better. Gus Edwards will help, right? I think all the guys they've signed will be tougher, like Bradley Bozeman, who they just signed from Carolina. Not a great player, but he's tough. They'll put him in there. And I think the combination of this is why I think they're going to have an offseason. A lot of the offseason comes down to coaching too, right? I mean, last year I thought the Browns had a good offseason because they hired Schwartz to be the coordinator. That makes a huge difference.
This next team, I know these are in no particular order, but I would have had at the top of my list in the Houston Texans, a team that has not been afraid to spend the last couple years and continue to go all in to support their quarterback and add to that defense on the other side.
Yeah, and they keep spending, and I think they still have some moves up their sleeve. I mean, they still have cap room, and the Deshaun Watson trade is the gift that keeps on giving, right? And so they're able to continue to add to that defensive front. You know, they're sniffing around on receivers. Will they go after Stephon Diggs? I don't know. But to me, they've really improved their defensive front, and that's the key to their team, right? They've improved in that area. So with doing that and adding the pieces that they've had, whether it's been Hunter, Autry, I think they really have improved, and now they have another draft to go to, which can give them those fine-tuned pieces that those players can come in and not have to play 90%. They can play 30% and make a difference.
And you talk about a team that's got their quarterback on a rookie contract and doing whatever you can to optimize that opportunity. Even you look at the Danielle Hunter deal worth almost $25 million a year, but they were still able to retain most of their free agents. They just did a really good job all around. And I'm so excited to see if they can take that next step in 2024-25. And last but certainly not least, you like what the Green Bay Packers have been up to.
Look, they didn't go for quantity. They went for quality. Got a really good running back in Josh Jacobs. You know, didn't have a great season last year, but a really good player. And Xavier McKinney gives them a safety who can get them lined up, along with Halfley, their defensive coordinator. Have to add him into this, right? He gives them a chance to improve on defense. So I think they've done a really good job. Now they have the draft. They're a young team. They're one of the youngest teams in the league. And they're only going to get better. I'm counting on Love taking another step forward to be really good. I'm counting on Dobbs. I'm counting on Watson. Those guys, those receivers, to go with Jacobs to take a giant step forward. And I think they will. I think this is a good team. I should have put Cincinnati, to me, is having a really good offseason as well. And when you break Cincinnati down, you say, well, like today, for example, they signed Trent Brown. Now, Trent Brown was not a good player last year at all. And there's a lot of talent in Trent Brown as a left tackle or a right tackle. But if you can get him to play, and that's a big if, and his weight's down, he can be a dominating run blocker. I've seen it too many times. It's frustrating. He just doesn't have a innate love of the sport to want to play it at the highest level, or else he would be one of the highest paid tackles in all of football. But they sign him back in there, right? I think they've improved their safety. Geno Stone to go along with bringing back Von Bell. Huge for Joe for their defensive coordinator. I mean, I think that's really a big thing for them with Lou Amoromo. When they get him back in there, they can get their defense lined up. I know losing Reader hurts. They get him back. They replace him with Sheldon Rankins from the Texans. Okay, not innately better, but at least can keep on par. I like what they did. You know, they were paying Moss. They were paying Mixon a lot of money. They went for a cheaper back, and Zach Moss leaves them open for the draft. I think this Bengal team is really you got to look at them as putting some pizza money down on potentially the odds to go to the Super Bowl from the AFC.
Yeah, and if Joe Burrow can stay healthy, of course, that will be key. A team that didn't make the playoffs this past year but made runs to the conference championship back-to-back seasons prior to that. The Bengals right now 7-1 in the AFC to see if they can punch a ticket to a Super Bowl this year. We still have plenty more to come on the Lombardi Line. We'll continue our NFL free agency talk. Also, show, why Michael says don't believe everything on the internet when it comes to these mock drafts, ladies and gentlemen. Plus, still lots of college hoops. Will Hill, our own from VSiN and the Should Have Bet More podcast, will give out some of his favorite plays for the opening round. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.